AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward.
Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Good afternoon. It is 12 o'clock and you are listening to Civic Media special coverage of President Biden's address to the nation in regards to the terrorist attacks in Israel that began on Saturday. It has led to an ongoing conflict. My name is Terry Bell. I'm the news director of Civic Media, and we are with you right up until the president begins speaking. He'll deliver remarks from the White House this afternoon about Hamas's unprecedented attack on Israel. In a statement Monday, the president said 11 Americans were killed in the conflict, adding it is likely that some Americans were among Hamas's hostages. NBC News reported that the Biden administration is sending ships from the USS Gerald R. Ford carrier strike group to the eastern Mediterranean Sea in support of Israel. The effort is also meant to serve as a clear message to Iran to stand down, according to a U.S. official who said the U.S. also plans to keep some F-16 and A-10 fighter jets in place. So we may very well be on the precipice of an international situation here. And the president will let the American people know what he has to say about this situation. Joining us now with what he has to say about the situation, Todd Albaugh, Civic Media host and political analyst. Todd.
Terry, I'm going to be with you this afternoon and to all our guests as well. Again, awaiting the president of the United States, Joe Biden, who will address the nation shortly here. I think it's interesting for listeners, Terry, to understand that National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby, of course, part of the administration, went on the news shows this morning, maybe gave some telegraphing of what the president might say to the nation this afternoon, saying very clearly that the United States is supporting Israel, that their right to defend themselves, and also that they want to make sure the U.S. does, that Israel gets the security that they need to defend themselves moving forward. It has not been a secret that the Biden administration has been a friend of President Netanyahu. Of course, there's been some consternation over what he's done internally in terms of trying to change the judicial system there. But when it comes to Israel's sovereignty and defending themselves, the Biden administration, as I think most of Congress, has been steadfast in their support.
As for Israel, Israeli Defense Forces says it has gathered 300,000 reservists amid speculation Israel would launch a ground operation in Gaza. The death toll has easily surpassed 1,000 people. There are some reports north of 1,300, including at least 700 people in Israel, according to the military, and 687 people in Gaza and the West Bank. That's according to the Palestinian Health Ministry.
Yesterday, our program in the afternoon, we had Sam Gold, who is a dual citizen of the United States and Israel, practiced law in Israel, lived there for about 3 years. And I think that there are many Americans who have dual citizenship. Many of our listeners may have friends or family who live in Israel. And one of the things I think we'll be looking to see what the president has to say here, just coming up shortly, is this issue of hostages. According to, again, National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby this morning, he said, quote, a number, unquote, of Americans are unaccounted for, and many of those could, keyword, could be hostages. There are reports of more than 100 hostages being held right now by Hamas since the attack began in over the weekend. And I think many people are looking at not just the dead Americans, but how many are being held hostage. And is the U.S. prepared to perhaps use American troops, if not directly, to intervene in helping to advise Israeli military and get some of those hostages back?
And times being what they are, a lot of the abductions were captured on video. And international terrorist experts and other law enforcement authorities are going through those videos very carefully to identify who it is that has been abducted. And some of those videos I've seen, they are, to put it mildly, harrowing. And it just speaks to the seriousness of the situation.
Absolutely. And again, many of these videos, there was one, a music festival in southern Israel that was attacked. You saw people running through the desert into the sand, being literally mowed down in some cases by members of Hamas. And it's, again, many Americans, I know there are Wisconsinites who have family and friends in Israel. These are uncertain times. And I think certainly having the President of the United States address the nation, lay out the plan, how the United States is going to coordinate and support Israel, and probably most important for people listening today is what that means for potential Americans still living in Israel, and perhaps even those that are in a hostage situation.
And key to the American response to the situation is the state of flux the U.S. House of Representatives finds itself in right now, with no speaker. And right. With no speaker, you don't have an agenda setting for the lower house.
Many of our listeners, of course, that listen to all of our programs, though we've been talking about this, the fact that Kevin McCarthy, the Speaker of the House, was voted out, the first speaker in the history of the United States to be voted out. And you're right, there's an interim. McHenry right now is the interim Speaker of the House. But by the rules of the House, they cannot pass any sort of legislation that would help with funding for potential further military aid or humanitarian aid, even for Israel. There is even some debate, Terry, in listening to folks, pundits smarter than me, whether the House could even pass a resolution condemning this attack by Hamas right now. There are reports out of Washington right now that Kevin McCarthy has been reapproached as saying, hey, would you be willing to step back in as Speaker so that we can get some of this aid to Israel? He's left that door open. But again, with those eight members of his own party that helped toss him out, without their support, it's doubtful McCarthy himself could get back in that role. And it's going to be very interesting today as Republicans meet behind closed doors with specifically Jim Jordan of Ohio, Steve Scalise of Louisiana, trying to pitch themselves as perhaps the next speaker so they can at least vote someone in so that the House of Representatives could conduct business such as helping with aid in Israel.
In your conversations with people who observe these sorts of things closely, is there anything the president can do without the help of lawmakers?
I think certainly there are executive orders that, my understanding is, there are a few weeks of aid that could be possibly given to Israel through executive order. But again, the funding itself, funding dollars, have to start with the House of Representatives. It can't be from the Senate according to law. And so all funding has to start in the House. And without a speaker right now, that is going to be next to impossible to get the major parts of funding. I mean, certainly President Biden through executive order could do some things, but the real consequence of getting money, military aid directly to the folks of Israel that need it the most right now, going to be very dicey how much Joe Biden can actually do. And again, we're awaiting his remarks, and he may lay that out today.
Absolutely. In case you've just tuned in expecting to hear Civic Media News at noon, we are carrying special coverage of the president's speech to the nation regarding Hamas's unprecedented attack on Israel on Saturday and the ongoing violence, the hostage taking. Now, the president's remarks are scheduled to begin any moment now, and when he does, we'll take it to the White House. In a statement yesterday, the president said 11 Americans were killed in the conflict, and adding that it is likely that some Americans are among those hostages taken by Hamas. This is a direct quote from the president. "We are seeing the immense scale and reach of this tragedy. In this moment of heartbreak, the American people stand shoulder to shoulder with Israelis. We remember the pain of being attacked by terrorists at home, and Americans across the country stand united against those evil acts and have once more claimed innocent American lives. It is an outrage." And for some perspective, I've heard it often said that this may very well be Israel's 9/11.
Interesting, to your point, Terry, it has been pointed out that if you compare it to 9/11 here in the United States, we don't mean to diminish any lives in the tragedy of 9/11, but for Americans, that's one of the easiest things to compare it to. Because of the size, the population of the United States versus Israel, which is much smaller, and the geography, some people have equated what happened over the weekend, the Hamas attacks on Israel, to 7 times what happened in the United States during 9/11. And then you add on the hostages that were taken, and then the fact that there are members of Hamas who are occupying Israel right now, and it gives you a sense of what the folks of Israel, the Israelis, are going through right now, and the huge scope of this tragedy for the Israeli people.
NBC News reporting the Biden administration is sending ships from the Navy's USS Gerald R. Ford Carrier Strike Group to the Eastern Mediterranean Sea in support of Israel. The effort is also meant to serve as a clear message to Iran to stand down. That's according to a U.S. official who says the U.S. also plans to keep some F-16 and A-10 fighter planes in place. Biden also said in his statement that he reaffirmed to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that the U.S. would continue to make sure Israel has what it needs to defend itself and its people as Israel battles militants and launched a deadly retaliatory airstrikes on the Palestinian coastal enclave after the defense minister called for a full siege of Gaza. The Israeli Defense Forces say they have gathered 300,000 reservists amid speculation that Israel would launch a ground operation in Gaza. The death toll has reached more than 1,000 people easily, including at least 700 people in Israel. That's according to the military, and 687 in Gaza and the West Bank. That's according to the Palestinian Health Ministry.
If you look, Terry, at the international implications of this, of course, part of the reason that the Biden administration has moved the USS Gerald Ford into the region is a deterrent to other folks in the region, in the Middle East, who would take advantage of this. Of course, part of the speculation run aplenty, but one of the storylines in this is that the Biden administration has been very integral in trying to bring about a peace agreement with Saudi Arabia and Israel right now. And of course, Saudi Arabia, the largest Muslim country in the region, and how that will affect Hamas, and that may have been part of the reason that Hamas did the surprise attack. Politically, of course, both at Israel and at home, there are all kinds of questions. The Israeli security forces, military, are world renowned in their accomplishments. How did this get by the Israeli intelligence? How did this get by the U.S. intelligence? Those are questions to be hashed out later. But right now, it appears the Biden administration wants to signal to Israel, A, we are firmly with you. B, we agree with your right to defend yourself. And C, we want to make sure you get all the aid we can possibly do in this time.
As it so often happens in developing situations like this, we're getting different numbers in terms of casualties. We were talking about 1,000 people dead earlier. Another account, this one from USA Today, has more than 1,600 Israelis and Palestinians dead since the conflict began, including, again, at least 11 Americans, thousands more injured. Hamas is claiming to have taken more than 130 hostages, and Israel is ordering a siege on Gaza, pledging to cut electricity, food, and fuel to the impoverished home where more than 12 million Palestinians live.
One of the things that's interesting, Terry, we had on, again, Sam Gold, a dual U.S. citizen from Israel and the United States yesterday, somebody who lived there for 3 years. And again, we're awaiting the remarks of President Joe Biden here live from the White House. He pointed out that he was involved in an accident while he lived in Israel and was taken to an Israeli hospital, I believe in Tel Aviv. And he said, when I got there, there were Palestinian nurses. There were Palestinian doctors. And he pointed out that there are Palestinians who have become Israeli citizens. So it's very complex, of course. And the important thing, I think, for people to remember is this is not a all Palestinians are terrible people thing, because Hamas is a part of, they're based in Palestine. But that the people who live in Israel, according to Sam Gold yesterday and others there, you know, there are instances where Israelis and Palestinians work and live together in peace. So this isn't necessarily a black and white thing. Hamas is not necessarily representative of all Palestinians at all. They simply house themselves in the Gaza Strip in the heart of Palestine.
The president's National Security Council spokesperson says the United States is unequivocally condemning the unprovoked attacks by Hamas terrorists against Israeli citizens. There is never any justification for terrorism. Biden has also condemned the Hamas attacks in an earlier address, saying the U.S. stands with Israel and his administration's support for Israel's security is, quote, rock solid and unwavering. Those are some of the earlier remarks from the president. He's given a couple of addresses since this attack on Saturday, and more to come. Within a few minutes, we understand. A programming note, if you've tuned in expecting to hear Civic Media News at noon and Town Call, we are providing special coverage of President Biden's speech to the nation. As soon as that begins, we'll take you right to it. But hopefully, in the time being, Todd Aubaugh and I are providing some context and some helpful information as we get ready to hear from the president.
Terry, again, to go back to the political ramifications here, Of course, there are all kinds of storylines out there, some that have been proven to be debunked, others that are more appropriate here. And one of the storylines that has been debunked by several news organizations is this line that somehow that the earlier this year, when the Biden administration made a deal with Iran to release some of the U.S. hostages, there was $6 billion that was unfrozen. And there's been a storyline that somehow that was used by Iran to fuel this attack through Hamas. Simply untrue. And as a matter of fact, on our program yesterday, we quoted the Fox News reporters and said, look, that is just patently false on that. What is factually accurate, back in 2017, during the Trump administration, former President Trump actually disclosed some of the Israeli military secrets to Vladimir Putin and the Russians. And there is some speculation where some of those secrets then funneled to Iran and used to help this attack. Again, those are things that will be ironed out later, but there is a deep political, both in Israel and here in the United States. And also remember that, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, and Joe Biden, President of the United States, they've known each other a long time. They've both been around politics a long time when Joe Biden was in the Senate, vice president, now as president. But, you know, what has happened in Israel lately, where some would argue that Prime Minister Netanyahu has made a power grab to try to change the judicial system there, that is not set well with Joe Biden and the Biden administration, and they have let Netanyahu know that. And as a matter of fact, when Netanyahu was in the United States visiting the UN, they had to meet in New York at the UN, not at the White House, but to kind of unfreeze these relations or thaw these relations a little bit because of what's happening in Israel. All of that after Saturday has been put aside to focus on what's happening right now and the United States in its tradition, both Republican and Democrat, I might add, this is not a partisan thing. Republican presidents, Democratic presidents have both stood strong with Israel in the 75 years since the country's been around, and for the most part, and that seems to be continuing here as we await the words of the president.
You mentioned the facts of Iran's connection to all this. So what are the facts of Iran's connection to all this? It's pretty clear that they are behind this to a large extent.
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly Iran has been a funder monetarily and military-wise of Hamas. And Hamas is not shy about what their goal is, and that is the eradication and extinction of Israel. That's it. That is their goal for Hamas. They're a recognized terrorist organization by the United States and most democracies around the world. And so this is a group, Hamas, whose only objective is to get rid of Israel and eradicate Israelis from the planet. And that has been funded through money and, again, arms from Iran. And so those are the facts. Again, speculation that we'll find out later from a larger global perspective. Again, did Putin have a hand in this, Russia, vis-a-vis Iran, to try to create this war, this diversion in the Middle East, to somehow take the focus off of what's happening in Ukraine? Because this certainly militarily and monetarily makes the United States focus on, as it should, in my opinion, on Israel. But does Putin want that in order to take focus off of what's happening in the Ukraine? Again, those are things that will be ironed out later. But to your point, Terry, there's no disputing that monetarily, militarily, Hamas has been funded both in arms and in money through Iran.
It is 12:18. You're listening to Civic Media, special coverage of President Biden's address to the nation about the situation in Israel. If you were tuning in expecting to hear Town Call, we expect to join that program in progress once the president has spoken. I guess we expected the president to have stepped to the podium by now, but as these things are wont to do, things are running a bit late. But we do expect to bring you the president's remarks once he does begin speaking. Once again, President Biden is expected to give remarks momentarily after Israel declared war on the Gaza Strip over the weekend after the deadly surprise attacks by Hamas over the weekend. We'll provide that coverage, of course, as soon as it happens. And
I think Terry actually will. Will Walter, one of the co-hosts of Town Call, of course, Luke Mathers is on vacation right now. I think Will is on the StreamYard. Normally, this is his time slot as we await the president's remarks. Will, what are your thoughts? I know you've been talking about this on Town Call this week as well. What are your thoughts and reflections on what's happening in Israel right now?
Well, first of all, Todd, I have to make clear that I am not a foreign policy expert, and I don't want to act like I'm Jared Kushner and I can swoop in and solve all of the world problems overnight with any idea or any semblance of what's going on. But I fear, and I just feel so sad for all of the innocent civilians caught up on in this situation, both Israeli and Palestinians. Remember, as I noted yesterday, a former Israeli, I believe it was the chief of their intelligence agency, was quoted as calling Gaza the world's largest open-air prison. These are people that have been fundamentally victimized for years and years and years at this point. So many civilian casualties, so many innocent people being forced to suffer on both sides. And it breaks my heart because at the end of the day, the only people who really benefit from the continuation of cyclical war is the defense contractors who, as I noted yesterday, stock prices for the largest defense contractors in the planet are up 4 to 5% over the past couple of days. So this is it's just heartbreaking. I can't think of any other way to phrase it.
We are awaiting word from President Biden about the U.S. response to the situation in Israel. Terry Bell, Todd Abba, and Will Walter coming to you, offering some facts and some perspective as we get ready to hear from the president, from the White House. Momentarily, more than 1,600 Israelis and Palestinians have died since the conflict began, including at least 11 American and thousands more injured. Hamas claims to have taken more than 130 hostages, and we don't know how many of them may be Americans. We may hear more from that on the president coming up. Israel has ordered a seize on Gaza, pledging to cut off electricity, food, and fuel to the home of more than 2 million Palestinians.
Again, Winnie, these things sometimes don't go off exactly as planned, Terry, as you and I both know. Sometimes, you know, as a former staffer to politicians, you know, they want to make sure they get it right. And again, there are numerous speech writers in the White House, and it's a tricky line, right, to try to walk this tightrope of diplomacy. To Will's point, certainly the Biden administration has been involved in trying to get peace talks between, as we mentioned, Saudi Arabia and Israel. So you don't want to, you know, offend anyone that's not Israeli. But on the same hand, again, as we pointed out, both Democratic and Republican administrations throughout history have been steadfast allies of Israel. After all, it's the only democracy in the Middle East. And it's a strategic military position. It's strategic in terms of diplomacy. And so you want to craft these things the right way. And of course, you know, there's always lining up the national networks as well. So we're waiting. We expect the president to come to the podium at any time.
Now, what we saw transpire on Saturday and since then truly amount to war crimes, do they not? These are violations of international agreements.
Yeah, that's the point that's well taken. That you know, as tragic and as almost unspeakable as war is, there are actually rules to war. And the fact that Hamas, again, a recognized terrorist organization, you know, is taking women, is taking children, is taking hostages. They're killing women and children on this, that they use humans as shields oftentimes in Gaza. I mean, those are just things that, you know, major countries are that crosses the line of rules of war and simple humanity and decency. So that's another, you know, again, after this, you know, at some point resolves itself, to your point, Terry, there's going to certainly be a look at, you know, what sort of war crimes were perpetrated here and how will those be prosecuted in a world court.
Let's bring in William Walter. He's the host of Town Call. We hear from him every weekday at this time. Will, your thoughts, your reflections.
Yeah, again, I have to just reiterate that I don't want to sit around and act like I'm some kind of expert on foreign relation, particularly in regards to the Middle East. This is, I think you could make the argument that this is the most complex geopolitical issue of the modern era. And to act like there is an easy solution or act like there is an obvious solution is doing a disservice not only to all of the people who live in the region, but to the millions of other individuals around the globe who have put their time and effort into trying to find a solution. It's not going to spring up overnight, but the idea that I keep coming back to every time I get asked, you know, what do you think about this, is why are so many civilians always in the crossfire? I don't care. I will always take the side of the individual over the side of the powers that be or the entities that be. And it frustrates me to no end when I see, for the faults, if you want to compare the Israeli government to the Israeli people, they are not one in the same. The Palestinian people and Hamas are not one in the same. Much in the same way you could make the comparison to American politics, that someone like Donald Trump does not represent all American citizens. And I feel so, so bad. It's tragic is a great way to put it, Todd, for all of the people caught in the crossfire of the powers that be as they enact their narrative and try to exert their control.
Well, I think to your point, Will, we had a guest on yesterday. I'm not sure if you were listening earlier, but Samuel Gold, who is an attorney both here and a dual citizen of the United States and Israel. And certainly, you know, he's Israeli and American and certainly pro-Israel and stands with Israel. But he made the point yesterday about having to, he was in an accident and was in an Israeli hospital and said, you know what, one of my doctors was Palestinian. One of my nurses was Palestinian. That there are Palestinians who were naturalized Israeli citizens or simply work in Israel. And to your point, Will, that it's not black and white always in terms of every Israeli is good and every Palestinian is bad, and vice versa, if you're a Palestinian, that there are people that get along and live very peacefully together, and that Gaza, that Hamas does not represent every Palestinian, that this is a fringe terrorist organization that lives and houses itself in Palestine, but is not representative of every Palestinian out there. And to your point, the great tragedy in this is that human beings, innocent civilians, are going to be killed, have already been killed, and are going to continue to be killed as human shields, and innocent lives are going to be lost on both sides. But I think it's important to remember this was perpetrated by Hamas. This was an attack, unprovoked attack over the weekend by Hamas. And I'm not sure anything could possibly justify killing innocent kids and women and taking them hostage.
You're listening to Civic Media special coverage of President Biden's address to the American people about the situation in Israel, where Hamas militants attacked the country Saturday, killing a range of anywhere from 900 to 1,600 people, depending on which report you happen to see. The number of 11 Americans seems to be rather consistent throughout these reports. 11 Americans killed in the attacks, an unknown number taken hostage. Israel responded to Saturday's violence with a siege and heavily bombing of the Gaza Strip. The president is expressing full-throated support in the wake of what he and his officials are describing as terrorist attacks. The president spent the long holiday weekend meeting with his national security team and working the phones with allies, including calls with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Biden pledged full U.S. support, with aid already on the way to Israel. The White House is also preparing for what spokesman John Kirby described as the grim possibility that Americans could be among the hostages now being held by Hamas. There are a number of U.S. citizens still unaccounted for. President said in a statement that he ordered his team to work with Israel on hostage recovery efforts. Separately, U.S. officials tell reporters they are offering Israel air defense and munitions and are pressing to get munitions to the country as soon as possible. Department of Defense officials are offering no timetable on when the USS Gerald Ford Strike Group, which includes an aircraft carrier, a guided missile carrier, and guided missile destroyers, are making its way to the Mediterranean. And that's the information that we have up to this point. And again, we are waiting for the president's remarks from the White House. You're listening to special coverage from Civic Media News.
And Terry, just checking the phone. I just started checking a couple of different sources here. ABC is all, it's not just us. Everybody on every major network right now is vamping and saying, what the heck is going on? Yeah. So a little confusion as we await. And again, Will Walter, who currently is, usually in this time slot from town call, is with us as well. I would say that now going on a half an hour is rather unusual, even for presidential speeches to be this late, especially when they called this earlier this morning for straight up at noon Central Time. So we'll see. But again, these things sometimes take time. There's a lot. I know that it's been reported that the president's been talking to Prime Minister Netanyahu over the last several days. And again, the president is supposed to come on the air to simply state where things are at, not just from pretty well known that he and his administration are steadfast supporters of Israel and their right to defend themselves. But I think to many Americans and many Wisconsinites, particularly those who may have friends or family living in Israel, this whole question of it's been reported that up to 11 Americans now have been confirmed dead and several are still missing and that they may be among the hostages taken in Israel as well by Hamas, being reported by CBS News and others that up to 100 people may have been taken as hostages. So we shall see what happens. But I think that's what I think many Americans, many Wisconsinites are waiting to hear from the president. What is the United States doing in terms of militarily and giving support to the Israelis to try to recover these and rescue these hostages that may be being held in Israel, particularly those Americans?
We may change the subject momentarily and ask Will what your plans are to discuss today, assuming that we're going to be able to get to an edition of Town Call on the air this afternoon.
Yeah, so we had a very fun day lined up. We had Representative Christine Sinicki, representative of the 20th Assembly District, comprising of Cudahy, St. Francis, and Southern Milwaukee. And we were going to be discussing Assembly Bill 439, along with great friend of the show and Mr. Milwaukee himself, Dan Schaefer. If you're not familiar with Assembly Bill 439, that is the Brewers Stadium funding package. The Committee on State Affairs met last Thursday, I believe it was, October 5th. At 11 a.m. at Wisconsin State Fair Park to have this discussion. I hate to make this joke now because it is a bit of a sore subject for him, but Dan and I were joking earlier in the week, boy, it would be problematic if the Brewers got swept and then the next day had their public hearing on whether we should be throwing more money at them. Unfortunately, that is the way that the situation played itself out, but we were going to be talking to Representative Sinicki about how the meeting went and what she thinks the next steps may or may not be.
We may take a moment now to step away for some network news and get the latest in what's happening around the world. Doesn't look like that's going to happen. What I can share with you is some of what's happening around Wisconsin from Civic Media News. Wisconsin public school students are getting better standardized test scores than last year. That out today. But officials said when they released that report card today, students are not doing as well in reading, writing, and math as they were before the COVID-19 pandemic, although they are doing better than they were last year. Again, that's according to the results of standardized tests given last spring and released by the Department of Public Instruction today. Also this week, the Wisconsin Policy Forum is out with a study that shows Wisconsin's public schools have lost more than 32,000 students since 2019 due to more children in private schools and being homeschooled. Wisconsin's population is also shrinking due to smaller families. A former Wisconsin Supreme Court justice is advising that Speaker Robin Voss not proceed with impeachment proceedings against Supreme Court Justice Janet Protasiewicz. Now, this all got started after the campaign. David Prosser says impeaching is so serious that it should only be considered if the subject has committed a crime or a corrupt conduct while in office. That's according to an email made public through an open records request. Prosser is one of three former justices advising Assembly Speaker Robin Voss on the possibility of impeaching the new liberal justice. Protasiewicz announced Friday she would not recuse herself from a case on Wisconsin's legislative maps next month. Those maps were drawn by Republicans. During her campaign, she called the maps rigged. Speaker Voss has suggested Protasiewicz has prejudged the case. Protasiewicz says she's made no promises as to how she would rule. Well, meanwhile, people in Wisconsin are working for what they consider more fair political maps. They gathered yesterday to talk about their plan for a new independent panel to draw future boundaries. Yuseli Flores is with the Wisconsin Fair Maps Coalition. She warns against the Iowa-style bill put forth by Republicans. Governor Evers is promising to veto the bill if it passes. Wisconsin's maps are widely considered to be the most gerrymandered in the United States. Three assembly committees are voting on three bills to put new limits on the rights of transgender Wisconsinites today. They include two bills to regulate who can and cannot play on girls and women's sports teams. Another bill would ban gender-affirming care for anyone under the age of 18. The bills are expected to be on the assembly's floor session schedule on Thursday. Governor Evers promises to veto them if they get to his desk. Syphilis is on the rise in Wisconsin. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services is putting out a memo to hospitals and clinics to get ready to do more testing. Data from last year shows the cases went up 19% from the year before. Of those cases, 81% were from mothers who passed it on to their children when they were pregnant. Wisconsin's chief medical officer is Dr. Ryan Westergaard. He says congenital syphilis can lead to serious complications for children, like vision and hearing loss or seizures. It can even be fatal. But Westergaard says it's preventable with simple screening, early detection, and treatment. Homes in Waukesha will soon get their drinking water from Lake Michigan. The switch has been years in the making since unsafe levels of radium were found in Waukesha's groundwater. Waukesha is the first community outside the Great Lakes Basin to divert the water under the Great Lakes Compact. Waukesha began pumping yesterday, and the city's utility manager says it'll take 5 or 6 days to get for that water to get to Waukesha's faucets. People in Waukesha should try to be prepared for their water to be maybe discolored, maybe even a little smelly at first, but officials maintain that that water will be safe to drink. And that's a little bit of what's happening around Wisconsin as we await President Biden's address on the situation in Israel here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
And Terry, thanks to our standing producer, Mr. Aaron Zommers, and also our program director, Catherine Lake. New information now via CNN saying that the reason for this delay, and of course, President Biden was scheduled to address the nation here at noon Central Time, Wisconsin time, and CNN reporting that President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris have just concluded moments ago a call with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, quote, to discuss our support for Israel, unquote, according to the White House. This marks the third call that President Biden has held with Netanyahu since the conflict erupted on Saturday. The White House plans to share a readout of the call very shortly, and President Biden still expected to deliver remarks on the conflict from the state dining room, now saying imminently, although those remarks have been delayed. So it appears we're getting the one-minute signal now, Terry, from Mr. Zommers.
So once again, unprecedented attacks on Israeli civilians by Hamas on Saturday and Israel's military response after that. And the president will talk about the United States' support of Israel. Also, perhaps he will touch on how the impasse in Congress will affect all of this. We will see about that as we hear from the president. We expect any moment from now.
And I believe, Mr. Zommers, we're going to take a break right now. Let's take a break very quickly. Come back with the remarks. Terry Bell, Todd Alball, Will Walter. This is a special report from Civic Media News on the address by the president about the war in Israel.
It's the most competitive sport for all to enjoy, and Milwaukee is even the capital for it. It's bowling, and the oldest bowling alley is in Wisconsin. Holler House is home to the two oldest sanctioned lanes in the U.S. and are still made of the wood installed in 1908. The building on West Lincoln in Milwaukee looks the same. Musicians Joe Walsh and Jack White have thrown a ball down those 115-year-old lanes. Now, can you guess the tradition that continues here to this day? A hot beef sandwich, just 25 cents. The pins still set by people? Swear and you're tossed out. The answer coming up. The fifth and sixth generations run Holler House, so some odd history does remain, like bras hanging from the rafters. The Alleys have even been featured in the Wall Street Journal and Sports Illustrated. So what's your guess about the continuing tradition? It's the pin still being set by people, no machines here. These stories make it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
As goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
Well, he had a little chat with management yesterday, and I did suggest a daily limo and a fruit plate.
How'd they take that?
That didn't seem to take that seriously for some reason.
I have full faith in you. You've been doing this for a long time. And you have Greg Bach.
I got a call from management this morning saying if I'd be interested in taking on new roles as a driver and buying fruit plates. That's a career opportunity.
Put that on your resume, baby.
Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Up North News.
Here's your updated forecast. Lots of sunshine this afternoon with highs around 54. Northwesterly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Lows dip down to about 34. Tonight, cloudy. High temperatures reach up to 55. Tomorrow, more clouds and sun. Temps a bit below average Thursday and Friday with highs from the upper 40s to the mid 50s. Scattered showers possible both days. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air WLAK 1260 AM. Right now, 52.
Broadcasting from atop the water tower.
Well, not really, but it sounds fun.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, Amory's radio station.
For a mini bit of town call, we're going to be covering a little bit of Wisconsin news today as we await President Biden's upcoming remarks. And Aaron, I want to jump into something that Terry touched on briefly, but I think was the most important story of the day, at least from a Wisconsin standpoint, that needs to be discussed, and that is the statement from former Supreme Court of Wisconsin Justice David Prosser, who sent Representative Robin Voss a email advising him against impeaching Janet Protasiewicz, noting that impeachment appears to be solely partisan, will very likely backfire. He does not see any evidence of corrupt conduct after Justice Protasiewicz took office, and there should be no effort to impeach her based on what is now known, according to the former Justice David Prosser advising Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who had asked him to review the issue. Now, this is, I don't want to say, a contentious implies that there's, you know, two good arguments to be made on either side. There clearly isn't from the Republican perspective, at least in this situation. There was no reason to impeach Janet Protasiewicz other than Robin Voss was upset that a liberal Supreme Court justice was victorious in this race. And he appears steadfast in his dedication to preserving power at all costs, whether it's acceptable legally, morally, ethically, all of the above. There's been a couple of really good pieces, I think, that have dove into this. I'll start over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, piece written over by Molly Beck. Robin Voss now silent on impeachment after former Justice David Prosser tells him not to pursue. After warning impeachment could be possible for Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Janet Protasiewicz if she did not recuse from a lawsuit before the court challenging the legislature's boundaries. Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss is not saying whether he will pursue the unprecedented move now that the liberal justice has announced she will stay on the case. Now, this comes from a story on Friday. We didn't necessarily get a chance to cover it as in-depth as I would have liked to, but Janet Protasiewicz announcing on Friday that she would not be recusing herself from any of these cases. Evidently, Friday is when the email from former Justice Prosser went out to Robin Voss as well. We just found out about it this morning. Voss is pulling back from the idea of impeachment 3 days after the former conservative state Supreme Court justice advised him not to pursue the idea in his first comments since Protasiewicz said she would not step away from the lawsuit seeking to redraw the state's electoral maps. Voss said the U.S. Supreme Court will, quote, have the last word, unquote, on whether Protasiewicz should have recused. Voss said in a statement, Justice Protasiewicz should have recused herself. We think the United States Supreme Court precedent compels her recusal, and the United States Supreme Court will have the last word here. Now, I find that statement absolutely hilarious, Aaron, because you remember in 2017, Wisconsin Supreme Court Justices Rebecca Bradley and Annette Zeigler took the opposite approach, arguing successfully, I believe it was a 5-2 decision at the time, that essentially Supreme Court justices in their campaign have the right freedom of speech, the ability to speak to their values, which is something that Janet Protasiewicz said throughout her campaign, that she was just speaking to her values, not speaking on how she would rule in any case. It appears to be another situation amongst many, it seems to be a conversation that comes up frequently, of conservative elected officials, do as I say, not as I do.
Not only is it do as I say, not as I do, it's do whatever I'm currently saying, because what I said before doesn't apply now if I don't like it anymore.
Mm-hmm. It's not applicable unless it benefits me in the immediate future. And I also want to note, Aaron, that the Supreme Court has ruled on this as well. There's a quote from the majority opinion in the Republican Party of Minnesota versus White, which was written by Justice Antonin Scalia, which quite literally sets the opposite precedent that Robin Voss is claiming. I believe, let me dig it up here for you quick here. It is perhaps possible to use the term impartiality in the judicial context, though this is certainly not a common usage, to mean lack of preconception in favor of or against a particular legal view. This sort of impartiality would be concerned not with guaranteeing litigants equal application of the law, but rather with guaranteeing them an equal chance to persuade the court on the legal points in their case. Impartiality in this sense may well be an interest served by the announce clause, but it is not a compelling state interest as strict scrutiny requires. A judge's lack of predisposition regarding the relevant legal issues in a case has never been thought a necessary component of equal justice, and with good reason. So the Supreme Court has made this ruling in the past that a justice's mind at the time that they joined the court was a complete tabula rasa in the area of constitutional adjudication, excuse me, would be evidence of lack of qualification, not lack of bias. This was from arguably the patron saint of constitutional originality, Justice Scalia. And if the Supreme Court were to take that approach, like you just joked, Aaron, that it's not even do as I say, not as I do, but do as I say right now, because what I said a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 10 years ago is no longer applicable to whatever benefits me in the immediate future, we could be in for a very, very, very interesting next couple of months, next couple of years even, both at the Supreme Court level in the state of Wisconsin and at the national level.
Yeah, it's the same thing as the whole Megan Wolf impeachment and Fred Prehn and how they ruled when it was on the side of the Republican leadership that, oh, Fred Prehn's not actually in office. He wasn't actually reappointed. So he can kind of just stay there for eternity and do whatever he wants. And now that somebody else is doing that and in a position where Megan Wolf has the authority to carry out other people's decisions, she's not even making the policies, at least for the most part, as I understand it. And
she enacts the WEC's policy. Yeah,
exactly. And then it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and I think it takes a very special type of I don't want to almost disassociation with with the rules and regulations that you have placed to be able to then turn around and say, no, this is no longer applicable because it no longer benefits me. Another interesting little tidbit in regards to the Wisconsin Commission is that David Prosser was not the only one on this panel, as Speaker Robin Voss had asked three former justices to review the possibility of impeachment. Now, David Prosser is the only one who publicly announced that he was on this panel. And of course, his email is the one that was released over to the liberal watchdog group American Oversight as part of an open records request from Friday. But I believe Justice Rogensack was also on this committee. While she did not admit it, she was included, or at least text messages from her to Prosser that were released via public record request also noted her asking if Prosser is free for a meeting. He released a voicemail that she left him that same day referring to the text, asking to speak with him on, quote, a matter that I thought we were going to look at together, unquote. Now, during the September 29th hearing, Justice Prosser denied the claim made by American Oversight that the panel was a governmental body subject to the state's open meeting laws. However, he has been releasing this information, including a voicemail he released from Justice Rogensack from October 2nd, where she says she wants to talk about why, quote, we, whatever we are not a governmental body, unquote. This is all over the place, Aaron. I don't even know how to approach this from a discussion and analysis perspective, because it seems, you know, Robin Voss gave the authority to these three former justices, but in his words, it was simply, you know, he was looking for potential legal advice, legal assistance. They had no official power in any way, shape, or form. He just wanted people that were well-versed on the law to be able to kind of let him know what is or is not acceptable purely from an advisory standpoint. It appears the justices might have had something else on the mind. They might have been thinking, no, this is an officially sanctioned body that has legislative authority or overview that we are able to perhaps use to enact policy, or our suggestions are more than suggestions, I guess. Let's put it that way. How do you rectify this if you're the voters of Wisconsin? Is this acceptable? I mean, I would have to say no, but I guess I'd like to hear your thoughts.
It's fake news. That's not actually what they were doing. They're being patriots. That's how.
They're being good, true Americans by doing what is expected of them. Now, Speaker Voss has issued a statement on Protasiewicz's recusal or refusal to recuse, I guess I should say, as we noted, that the Supreme Court will have the last words here. I read that as a threat, first and foremost, that Robin Voss is not happy with the other conservative former justices of the Wisconsin Supreme Court telling him, no, you do not have a case here. You're wrong. Is he just the most power-hungry individual in the state that he refuses to accept what is and is not allowable under Wisconsin law, even when members of his team are telling him that? So he has to then take it up to the next level of authority. I don't know. Again, if the Supreme Court has any semblance of responsibility to precedent, this precedent would have already been set by Justice Scalia. So it shouldn't matter if it gets back to the Supreme Court. But Robin Voss seems to be, I feel like he's a bit of a cornered animal in this situation. He doesn't know how to respond. He knows that the maps in Wisconsin are the GOP skeleton key. And if he loses that key, essentially the Republicans lose the complete unfettered control they had of the state. And he is willing to do or say whatever is necessary in order to preserve that power.
I feel like you can't expect to assert complete dominance over any part of a democratic or like republic. And the Republican Party leadership at the state level, at the national level, has been dead set on simply removing the people's choice and lying and cheating, changing the rules, whatever they need to do to get there. And I don't know how you can expect to do something like that without the consequences of people not agreeing with you and wanting to vote someone else in, as is their right.
Yeah, electoral consequences. It's something we talk about on the show all the time, Aaron. I will never have a say in who's on the board of directors of any Fortune 500 company, right? But I do have a say in who represents me at the local level.
Right.
I can go out and organize. I can talk to my friends, my family, my neighbors. I can say, hey, I've had enough of X, Y, and Z. Why don't we choose somebody else? It's that old, you know, the famous quote on the definition of insanity, right? Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. If you keep electing the same people, you're going to keep getting the same results. We seem to be seeing that in the state of Wisconsin. There was a really interesting tweet from Patrick Marley as well in regards to the Supreme Court decision in the GOP of Minnesota versus White. Keep in mind, this was in 2002. So this was 21 years ago when the Supreme Court found that judicial candidates can state their view on legal and political issues. That case was argued by James Bopp, who has recently represented Robin Voss. It's a big club. You ain't in it. In this situation, everybody knows each other. It's the same circle of individuals participating in these cases, not just in the state of Wisconsin, but at the national level, pushing their agendas, pushing their narrative, pushing their worldview on everybody else, and expecting us to just kind of fall in line because they're the powers that be. And I don't know if it's that they just think they're better than us. think they're more knowledgeable than us, think that what they're doing is we can't govern ourselves, so we need these white knights to step in and save us. I don't know what these elected officials seem to be thinking, but they change the arguments that they are making on the daily whenever it benefits the current narrative that they are trying to push. And I, frankly, am sick of it.
Me too. And I also, I find it hard to believe that any of them just want money, because unless they're just morally bankrupt as people, because I can't imagine going through my day and having to contradict myself and lie all the time just to get the money that I want and then not even have time to do with it what I want to do. They must think that what they're doing is the right thing, at least some of them.
Well, it's more complicated, too. You're just creating problems for yourself, Aaron. I'm a firm believer in just tell the truth. That way you don't have to worry about keeping a story straight, right? It's so much easier to remember the truth if you're just honest with everybody from the get-go. You don't have to remember whatever web of lies you've spun up for this person and then remember to balance it out with whatever you told to that person, worrying about if they're ever going to come together and realize, like, wait a minute, everything that they told me was a complete fabrication. Just keep it simple. What is it? Keep it simple, stupid, right?
Yep.
The easiest form of action in the world is you're keeping it as simplistic as possible by just being honest and just telling the truth. And when we're, you know, speaking of honesty, Aaron, I want to give a little bit more. I want to elaborate a little bit more on the quote from former Justice David Prosser. He wrote to Robin Voss, "To sum up my views, there should be no effort to impeach Justice Protasiewicz on anything we now know. Impeachment is so serious, severe, and rare that it should not be considered unless the subject has committed a crime or the subject has committed indisputable corrupt conduct while in office." Now, Justice Prosser is saying that none of those things occurred. So he is refuting what we have heard from a lot of Republican elected officials at the state level who did claim that Justice Protasiewicz's conduct was, you know, corrupt. It was indisputable. Now, they never necessarily accused her of committing a crime, but they did accuse her of prejudging a case, which they labeled as corrupt conduct from a judicial elected official. And now we have former conservative judicial officials coming out and saying, like, no, that is not the case here. This was not corrupt. This is protected. The threat of impeachment should not even be considered. And I'm interested, I guess, to see where Robin Voss is going to go from here, because he has been mum on the situation so far. He's backed down a little bit from the impeachment threat over the past couple weeks after initially declaring that he would be impeaching her immediately if she refused to recuse herself. That appears to not be the case. We're going to see how he approaches the situation going forward. I also have to note, Aaron, that other justices, both conservative and liberal, have spoken out in the past on issues that could come before the court. Current justices have accepted campaign cash from political parties and others with an interest in court cases and haven't recused themselves, but none of them faced threats of impeachment. Only in this situation, because now Robin Voss's maps are potentially threatened, now he's going to resort to impeachment because he has no other alternative.
It's very, I would say it's childish, but it's more intentional than that. The attitude behind it is childish, though. And just all of these people need to go back to kindergarten and learn that sharing is caring.
That's an excellent point, Aaron. But I think we are long, long, long past the days of basic empathy for some of these individuals. Let's not forget that Mr. Voss's popcorn business received a substantial PPP loan while he simultaneously turned around and said that student loan relief was un-American and unconstitutional. So again, rules for thee, not for me. I'm sensing a theme in this situation that reiterates itself time and time again. So thank you for joining us, everybody, for a little bit of a mini town call conversation today. We're going to be going live to coverage of President Biden's special announcement, and we'll be back tomorrow with more town call. Looking forward to seeing you then. Take it easy, party people.
Talk to you tomorrow.
It's the most competitive sport for all to enjoy, and Milwaukee is even the capital for it. It's bowling, and the oldest bowling alley is in Wisconsin. Holler House is home to the two oldest sanctioned lanes in the U.S. and are still made of the wood installed in 1908. The building on West Lincoln in Milwaukee looks the same. Musicians Joe Walsh and Jack White have thrown a ball down those 115-year-old lanes. Now, can you guess the tradition that continues here to this day? A hot beef sandwich, just 25 cents. The pin still set by people? Swear, and you're tossed out. The answer coming up. The fifth and sixth generations run Holler House, so some odd history does remain, like bras hanging from the rafters. The alleys have even been featured in the Wall Street Journal and Sports Illustrated. So what's your guess about the continuing tradition? It's the pin still being set by people. No machines here. These stories make it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to WLAK 1260 AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward.
Always streaming on the Civic Media app.